OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, is pretty well accepted in our alphabet soup culture, mined for films like As Good As It Gets and TV shows like Monk and Hoarding, Buried Alive. Amazing to think that back in the 1970s, there was just a handful of doctors nationwide, pretty much one here in Boston, that treated OCD. He's Michael Jenneke. He's now a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and a member of the board of directors of the International OCD Foundation, which he helped create and which is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year and holding its 18th annual conference in July. So we thought, ahead of that conference, which is in San Diego, why not get a status report? Where are we on OCD? And Michael Jenneke joins us in the studio to do that. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you for inviting me.
And one of the times you were here was 2009. A book by one of your patients was published. We'll link people to it. It was Ed Zein's book, Life in Rewind. Incredible story of how he couldn't take steps forward without taking steps backward. I mean, he sometimes would travel for miles just to get 10 feet away. I mean, really heartbreaking. And yet he had at that point managed it. So start there. How is he? How is someone with that intense OCD doing?
Ed was pretty much 100% disabled for quite a few years when I first met him and I worked with him. And I had lunch with Ed and his wife and two daughters about six, 8 weeks ago. And he's doing great. He still has OCD symptoms, as he talked about. But overall, his life has just dramatically improved, really settled down and become a really wonderful fellow.
How great to hear, because again, it's hard to explain how troubling this got, and that it's managed is terrific news. But again, how troubling does it get?
Well, Ed was probably as sick as anybody I've ever seen. I see a lot of people like him now. I mean, in almost every state, I know of a few patients that are stuck somewhere in a basement or in a bathroom. In fact, after this, I'm going to see a person who's stuck in a bathroom naked and has been there for quite a while, see if we can get him out and get things moving.
Because why? There became too many different things they had to do before they could make a move?
Sometimes that's the case. Some people feel fear contamination in the world, so they find some place that they feel is safe. Sometimes it's the bathroom, ironically, and they'll stay in there just to avoid contamination. Sometimes they're afraid of contaminating other people, so they keep themselves locked up.
Yeah.
Sometimes the rituals are just incredibly intense. They have to do things over and over.
And you've described it to us as people experiencing thoughts that come in, and they have to start doing this ritualistic behavior to keep the thoughts at bay, and then the ritualistic behavior takes over.
The rituals are sort of like Valium for the thoughts. The thoughts terrify them, cause anxiety, and then the rituals lower it, the anxiety, but then it comes right back. So it's just a vicious cycle where it can pretty much take up every waking minute in a severe case of OCD.
Yeah. And what do you think of the people who think they may have a touch of it? Oh, I have to keep my papers piled a certain way. Is that devaluing or somehow diminishing the very serious cases, or do you have sympathy for that?
No, I think everybody has, except for me and maybe you. No, you have some. Everybody has a few of these little quirks. It's just human nature to be a little superstitious. But if you have a severe case of OCD, there's no mistaking it. You can't function. You can't go to work. You can't have relationships. You're terrified all the time. It's a whole quantitatively and qualitatively different experience.
Can you actually have some of it and be fine with it? For instance, not want to touch doorknobs because you know that's how colds are transferred. And so that's what you do and you're fine with that.
That's possible.
Yeah.
I mean, some people make a decision that they want to use Purell all the time, and that often merges into OCD, probably sometimes a mild case of OCD. But if a person's comfortable with what they do, then who am I to tell them that that's not appropriate?
Do you think there's more of it than ever? We understand an estimated 4 million people in the U.S. suffer from OCD. That includes 1 million children and teenagers. Is that more than before, or are we more aware of it?
I think it's really a function of awareness. I don't really think it's a disorder that's rampant for some new reason. I think it's been around forever, but it's so embarrassing. If you're a doctor or a lawyer and you're doing these sort of, quote, crazy things for 2 or 3 hours a day, you don't want people to know. But now that it's out there, it's on the TV shows, on Oprah, and on the radio, people are willing to talk about it. And sometimes it's almost a badge of honor now. I have OCD, and they want to come on shows and talk about it.
Well, it's interesting. We have sort of second-generation children of OCD. There was recently an article, very poignant, about children of hoarders. You know, what's it like to grow up? And we're not talking about a cluttered home. We're talking about a home you can't even get into. And these young people now are talking about its effect on them. Are you seeing that?
Unfortunately, I've been around so long that I do now see the kids and occasionally the young grandkids of patients that I saw 35 years ago. And it's a genetic illness in many people, so it does follow through from generation to generation.
Really? Are you sure that's nature and not nurture?
Yes. If you look at twin studies that are raised apart, the ones that are identical twins have a much higher concordance for OCD. I mean, the question is, if it was all genetic, why don't all of the twins have OCD? But it clearly goes from family to family. We have done huge genetic studies now, and there'll be new data coming out in the next year about maybe even which genes might be involved in OCD.
So you may be able to know if you're destined to have it. That's the tricky question of whether or not you want to know that. But how do you treat it?
Well, let me just talk about the destiny for a minute. Yeah. If we could identify who's going to develop OCD, we could actually do preventive things and teach people behavioral therapy before they develop the symptoms. It is possible to prevent OCD. I mean, that's one of our hopes. Preventing it is the same thing as a cure. Yeah. In terms of treatment, there are two main treatments. The cognitive behavioral therapy is very well worked out now. It's been around for quite a few decades.
Explain, cognitive behavioral therapy. That's not talk therapy.
Well, you are talking to a patient, but you're actually getting them to do things. You'll make a list of the kind of things that set off their OCD, the kinds of things they avoid, and then you start somewhere low down the list and you get them to touch something they're afraid of. For instance, if they're afraid of hospitals, you'll get them to touch a magazine with a picture of a hospital, and then they'll get anxious, and then they stay in that anxious state and it will just come down. And then when they can touch that without getting anxious, then you go to the next thing. You actually have them walk by a hospital and eventually get them go in the hospital. If they're afraid of AIDS, you actually have them go sit in the AIDS clinic and then eventually shake hands with the AIDS person. So you gradually work your way up until they can expose themselves to these situations and the anxiety comes down. And then their brains learn that they don't have to be so fearful, that nothing terrible happens. But it's got to be very graduated, and it's much, much more effective if you have a very skilled person doing this with them.
So you can't just sit someone down and have them talk about their fears. That talk therapy won't work.
It will do nothing.
Right. What about medications?
Medications is another bright area. I think the cognitive behavioral therapy is the best treatment, and the second best treatment we have is medications. There are certain medications that are helpful. The SSRI medications are helpful, and there are combinations of medications that are helpful. And one of the newest areas is combining drugs that affect serotonin, because we think that serotonin is involved in OCD, with drugs that affect glutamate. Some people have abnormalities in glutamate. They have elevated activity in the brain. There's higher metabolites in the spinal fluid, and if you give these other drugs along with the SSRIs, some people have a very good result with that kind of treatment. So that's one of the bright areas now.
Michael Janicki, a psychiatrist and professor at Harvard Medical School, an expert in obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. Not just the, I have to have my papers on my desk straight, but people who so obsessively respond to thoughts that they can't leave a bathroom because there are so many rituals they have to perform to keep those thoughts at bay. Now, there were once just a handful of doctors who understood the disorder. Now there's a national organization having its 18th annual conference in San Diego in July. We'll have information at herenow.org. We've been learning what Michael Janicki and others have learned in the 25 years of treating this disorder, including the finding that it's genetic. So, Michael, start there. Do you have to have that genetic predisposition, or can you give yourself the disorder? Can you start just by simply washing your hands or hearing an abusive parent's voice in your head, you know, telling you that you're dirty, and go down a slippery slope without the genetic disposition?
Well, I think you have to have a predisposition to OCD, and then something in the environment brings it out. Childbirth sometimes can bring it out. I have seen a few cases where you had a mother with very severe OCD that forced the daughter or the son to just wash, 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 and sometimes they even had to take the child's dolls and make the child wash the child's dolls. And this constant reinforcing that you had to wash everything and keep it clean gave them a syndrome that looked like OCD. But once you get them away from the mother and give them some education, those kind of melt away in a hurry. The biological OCD is much harder to treat.
That's so sad. I mean, what other behaviors have you seen?
Well, the typical things are washing, having to look at things a certain way, line things up. Sometimes people can get so deep in thoughts that they look like they're catatonic. I've had patients you just couldn't talk to because their thoughts, they'd have to think a thought, and then they'd have to think it again, and then they'd have to think the reverse, and then they'd have to do it three times forward, three times backward. And the if you start listening to what people's obsessions are, sometimes it just makes you feel like the whole world's out of control. They're just, their minds are so tormented by these twists of things going on and on and on. Then there's the group of patients that hoard. There's an interesting form of OCD that starts after a strep infection, PANDAS. If I can remember what it stands for, pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorders associated with strep. That's pretty good for me. And it can happen after Lyme and mono and things like that. An infectious agent looks like it can clearly stimulate obsessive thoughts. And these children, they're usually children that get this. Their handwriting can be normal one day. The next day they can't write. It looks like scribbling. Their cognitive abilities decrease. They don't want to eat. And one of the things they get prominently is obsessive compulsive symptoms. And then you treat them with antibiotics. Often the symptoms diminish dramatically or go away, and then the next time they get a strep infection, these things can come back overnight. Huh. You have a totally normal kid one day, and the next day they're screaming that they want to die. Everything's contaminated, and they can't stand it. These children are just in so much pain. It's just incredible. So that's another whole area that we are looking into more heavily now.
Well, given all of this, you know, back 25 years ago, there might have been 5 doctors, I think, in the country specializing in this, and now you're having a convention. Over 1,000 OCD sufferers.
The conference is fascinating. I think maybe in the late 70s, early 80s, went on the Larry King show with a patient, and I had, within a month, had probably 5,000 calls. I drove my secretary crazy for people saw the show, and we thought OCD was very rare, and then we find out it's very common, and it affects millions and millions of people. That's how this sort of took over my life. I had to stop the other things because there were so many patients. I do feel very obligated to try and help these people, and that's why part of my mission is to educate the public and also to educate doctors and get more doctors involved. So we try to train as many young doctors as we can. And we now have across the country hundreds of people that do this kinds of work. We have 3 residential treatment facilities. We have one at McLean Hospital, Rogers Hospital, Wisconsin, and there's one in Houston where people can actually go for a few weeks to a few months and get daily treatments. One of the biggest issues, if the people have insurance, sometimes the insurance will not cover treatment. They'll often not cover the residential treatment. They'll say the child can go get outpatient treatment, but there's nowhere they can go. If they have severe OCD, they really need residential treatment. People that are stuck in bathrooms and in homes, insurance often won't pay for anybody to go see them.
It's hard to tally the cost of hours and hours and hours of someone and maybe Michael Janicki coming and talking to them.
Yeah, so my solution is we've started a home behavioral therapy program. Well, we'll get people to go there, and then we try to raise money to help pay for these people to go, because a lot of people with OCD don't have insurance, don't have money. Somehow we've just closed the door on these people, and they just rot in the basements. And I think it's up to the physicians and clinicians involved in this to do something about it, even though the insurance system is not stepping up to the plate. Getting more people involved, getting these conferences going has been dramatically helpful to make sure that we can get people help. But I still think we're only scratching the surface. But these kind of programs, someone will hear this and say, oh my gosh, I do that, or my daughter does that. How do we get treatment? So I think it's important to point out what to do. And I think one thing they can do is just go to the OC Foundation website, www.ocfoundation.org. That will help you. I can also, if you don't mind, I can give my email address, and I don't mind.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I do it on these shows. I get quite a few after, but all I have to do is get someone to the right place, and I have a bunch of articles I can email people. So why don't I just give that?
All right.
Jenike, J-E-N-I-K-E, at Comcast, comcast.net, N-E-T. So Jenike at comcast.net. Try the OC Foundation first. If you don't feel like you're getting the help you need there, email me, and I'll get back to you.
That's incredibly generous of you. That's Dr. Michael Janicki, a professor at Harvard Medical School, but also chair of the Scientific Advisory Board and a member of the Board of Directors of the International OCD Foundation, which will be celebrating its 25th anniversary this year with a conference. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Robin.